I'm Lou Conran.
And I am Sally Ann Hayward.
We're a pair of comedians who've been known to enjoy an alcoholic beverage or 10 over the years, sometimes separately, sometimes together.
But it's occurred to us that we know nothing about the drinks that we love to quaff, and that, unbelievably, there will be some types of liquor out there that we are not acquainted with.
And as we hate missing out, we thought we'd invite some celebrity pals to recommend their go-to tipple and drink along with us while we make them dish the most embarrassing booze-related tales.
And then we give our honest verdict if we are going to spit or swallow. So if it's gross, we drank it so you don't have to.
And it's definitely not just an excuse to open up the drinks cabinet on a Monday night.
Heaven forbid.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Lou. What have you been doing today?
Oh, Sally Ann Hayward. I'll tell you what I've
full
been
name.
Doing. Full name? Do you have a middle name? Anyway.
No.
No, good. You don't need one. I'll tell you what I've been doing today. I've been mostly blowing my nose with hay fever, which has decided to set upon me.
Do you know what you could have done as well with the guest that we're
interviewing
now? You could have asked him about hay fever. You only asked him about pooing, didn't you?
I did, but that was more important at the time. But maybe we could just ring him back up and get him back on and talk about other things.
I think we should. I think that would really please him as a doctor as well.
I think it would really please him, yeah. Dr. Phil Hammond. Not Hammered. Phil Hammond. No,
Hammond.
No, no.
Hammond.
Hammond.
Hammond. He's a very funny man and he's a very clever man, isn't he?
Yeah. I was out of my depth with that. Intelligent people.
I know.
No. Oh, gosh.
Lots of drunk stories, but he managed to evade the question, didn't he, a little bit by telling us drunk stories that incorporated other people.
Yeah, what a clever man, and I wish I'd have learnt to do that. Shall we listen?
Yes. So, Lou, I've had a good week because I've got myself a patio heater Aldi. Yeah, tell us about your week. I circled all Aldis of Bristol and eventually got one, and I'm delighted.
Great. Well, do you know what? I've had a reasonable week. I'm so pleased that we've got Dr. Phil Hammond as our guest tonight, because I know he probably gets sick of people asking him doctory type questions, but I need to...
Is it your bowels?
It is, yeah. I just haven't had a shit for a good couple of days. And...
That's not bad for you.
I know. It's getting better. But Dr. Phil, hello, welcome. We'll get to your drink in a minute. How can you make me shit?
With a coffee.
Oh,
unsurprisingly.
Yes.
The coffee's pretty good. Are you in the getting the correct position? Have you changed your position recently?
Well, listen, I've got a squatty potty, which has helped. So I've got my knees up.
Yes.
Yes.
Got to get your hips below your knees. That's really important.
Yeah. Yes. Do you think it's the alcohol consumption that may be preventing me from shitting properly?
That is the commonest reason that people dry up a bit.
In fact,
I remember speaking to Adrian Childs. Adrian Childs went to his GP. I'm sure he won't mind me saying this because it's
too late now.
Record. with hemorrhoids, and the hemorrhoids were because he'd become so dehydrated because he was drinking too much that he was really pushing. So yes, commonest reason probably in lockdown is too much alcohol.
Yes, and I have a little boy's tongue hanging out of my bum hole as well.
That'll be a hemorrhoid, surely. Or it might be a little boy's tongue.
Does it pop in again easily?
Yes, I can shove it up.
And don't go back in. Oh, that's all right then. That's fine. None to worry about it. So when they come out, they don't go back up in, you're in trouble.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just drink more water then. Anyway, it's about...
But the thing is that the old ladies get constipated because they have dodgy hips.
Yeah.
And so they can't get on and off the toilet. And so they have something to raise the seat. But then that doesn't put them in the natural position for unfurling the rectum. So what you need to do is get your hips
lower than
the nails. You need to unfurl. It's sort of S-shaped.
Yes.
And so if you squat, it naturally unfurls the rectum and you can give birth in the same position.
Great.
But if you go too high, then it cramps up again. So you need a stool, which means you sit on your raised seat.
Yes.
But you have a stool that then raises your feet, and then you can kick it away when you've pooed and then get off again.
Oh, thank you.
So a stool is what I recommend.
Sometimes what I do is I stand on the loo and squat.
The Japanese do that.
Yeah. Right. And, do you know, and Dr. Phil, can I ask you one more question?
Yeah.
Is it true that the people that do always go to the toilet like that by squatting don't suffer with constipation?
I think less so. They also probably, the kind of people who do that also eat a lot of fibrous vegetables.
Oh.
There's always a confounding variable. People who squat to poo, you can be pretty certain, pluck things off the tree and out of the ground rather than eat ultra-processed sugary crap. So I think it's probably a combination of the two things.
Well, that won't be me because I've had a bilateral something or other operation on both of my knees and I can't bend.
She's going to bring everything to the party now, isn't she?
I am.
She really is.
I am.
So,
anyway.
Dr. Phil. I mean, we're going to call you Dr. Phil, not Philip. Well, we might do. We might call you Dr. Philip when we're telling you off.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we're not going to tell you off yet.
No.
We're going to ask you what drink you have brought to the Spit or Swallow bar.
I didn't realise it was a Spit or Swallow bar. I thought it was just a drink and you might be interviewing me in the morning. So the reason I chose coffee is coffee is my stimulant of the morning. It's my drug of choice.
Oh, does that help you to unfurl your rectum?
Yeah, no, coffee is really good for a poo, provided you're not dehydrated. So make sure your wee is straw-coloured or lighter. So when you're doing your first morning pee, it's usually a bit dark.
Yes.
So you need to be drinking enough water, preferably. And then a good coffee will, that stimulates
the
muscle receptors and gets it going. So it's a nice combination. And I work best in the morning. So when I get up, I really look forward to my first coffee of the day. But I'm drinking a bit too much at the moment. So the reason I chose grind house blend coffee, it's almost like a session coffee. It's not one that will absolutely take your head off. It's if you know you're going to be in and having a few coffees in the morning. And my daughter, my lovely daughter Ellie, bought it for me for Christmas. With a couple of vodkas, so we could have like a vodka espresso when we were feeling like it later on and get a bit giggly.
Right.
So it's a number of reasons. I like the taste of the coffee and it reminds me of my daughter.
Oh, how lovely.
Up in London and I haven't seen her for ages. And,
how old is your daughter?
That's a very good question. I'm going to say 24.
Great. Let's go with that.
Give or take a year or so, I would say.
Has she followed you in the medical footsteps?
No, I thought she might be a vet and she would have been a very good vet, but she decided to do English at university and then decided for some reason to do law, which I was a bit dubious about. But she likes winning an argument, does Ellie, and she's got this training contract with HMRC, which again, I thought would be absolutely dreadful and she'd come after my tax and VAT. But she's fascinated by the fact that whether you pay VAT on a Jaffa cake and not on a penguin. It all depends
cakes
on the amount
and biscuits.
Cakes and biscuits.
So we've had this previously, Phil.
She's Jason Manford.
Yeah,
never mind sanitary products, whether it's a Jaffa cake or a biscuit. It's really interesting debate. So she's enjoying doing that.
I reckon a Jaffa cake would soak up.
Anyway, you could use that, couldn't you?
I think so.
And you could use a penguin as a tampon.
Mm.
Yeah, you're always going to have a safety net, haven't you? Always have a safety net.
Always.
I don't need one now because I am barren and dry, Phil. But anyway, I've got a selection of liqueurs here, which I'm going to give you the option as to which one I pour into my coffee. So, Phil.
You start, Lou, because I've got them.
I've got Bailey.
Why don't you try the coffee without it first?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
do that.
All right, okay. Oh, cheers. Oh, fuck me, I've made a really strong one.
You always do.
Yeah, okay. I do. It's really nice, though,
well,
isn't it?
Well, it is. The constipation could be unfurling.
Bless you.
Made me sneeze, that coffee. I like it. I brought two sorts of milk with it, me as well. I brought the semi-skimmed, general, usual green top, and also the organic oat milk.
Oh.
Ah.
Which one would you recommend that goes into that, Phil?
Well, see, I'm black. I have everything black, so
I've
I don't.
Bareback.
And I know there is lots of, you can have an oat milk and an almond milk and a whatever milk, lactose-free milk, and they're all a bit confusing.
Today I had a gluten-free bit of panettone and an oat milk coffee, and I've never felt more depressed.
Oh God, let's sort that out then.
I'm gonna go black. I'm gonna join you guys.
Yeah, it's delicious, actually. I mean, this will put hairs on your doodahs, but.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. And you've made yours in a pod thing, and I've made mine in one of these French press things. No, not sort of French press, is it? Anyway, it's a swish machine-y thing, and it's really strong, which is why I need
I think it's good. They say unless you're heavily pregnant, I think caffeine is pretty good. There's all, you know, you can pick any copy of the Daily Mail at random, and they'll say coffee good, coffee bad, depending on which page you turn to. But generally, I think it's pretty good, unless you have very high blood pressure or you're heavily pregnant with high blood pressure. I think caffeine is good, probably reduces your risk of bowel cancer a bit by clearing things through, possibly even dementia.
And really?
People's performance, your comedy performance will improve with just the right amount of caffeine. It's a bit like alcohol. You don't want to get too jittery. If you go beyond the therapeutic window, then you get a bit anxious and jittery. So there's just the right amount of caffeine and alcohol is needed for...
When we were allowed to work, I would always have a really strong coffee 10 minutes before I went on stage. And that did the job. Mm. That's great.
And they never asked you back.
Nope.
Well, the danger is if you have a little bit too much, you speak very quickly. I found that I speak too quickly anyway. But I found if I get too caffeinated before performing, then, I'm just off. I'm off on one.
Maybe I'll... go on, sorry.
I remember talking to my friend once and I was chatting away to her for ages. Then I went to her, I've had a lot of coffee, haven't I? And she went, I was wondering what was wrong with you.
But you're normally like that anyway. But imagine, I get quite excited. Yeah.
But it does muck up your sleep. But interestingly, probably not as much as alcohol. If you're going to drink, it's best, from a sleeping point of view, it's best to drink in the morning. I know that doesn't sound terribly medical, but alcohol also takes a while to get out of the system, and you think it will help you sleep better, and it doesn't.
No, I know that.
You don't get both the phases of sleep. You need the two phases of sleep. There's like a sculpture. You need to get your clay, and then you need to sculpt it into beautiful sculpture, and alcohol wipes one of those out, so you don't get proper restorative sleep with your red wine and your Piriton or whatever you do on a...
Sally, now you have mocked me before when I have taken an antihistamine before I've drunk my wine.
Yes, I have.
I always have an antihistamine before I drink my wine, Dr. Phil. And I I don't. But most of the time when I remember, have an antihistamine before I drink my wine, and I find that the wine doesn't affect me that much.
She's so full of shit.
You get a nasty hangover. The anticholinergics are the quite strong, and like Piriton, which is the one you buy really cheaply over the counter that really knocks your kids out.
Yeah.
It takes 24 hours to get out the system. So it actually, you're probably dangerous to drive the morning after a Piriton, so you've got to be a bit careful with that.
All right, warning you there. Let's crash on then. Okay. Right, Dr. Phil, you get to decide. I've got a Baileys, I've got Kahlua, I've got Cointreau, or I've got a single malt whiskey. Which would you like me to have in my coffee?
I mean, Kahlua and coffee probably go well, don't they? Try a bit of Kahlua.
All right.
Be lovely.
Okay.
What about me? I've got a vodka. I've got a little rogue Baileys called Ballycastle. I've got a Kahlua as well. And I've got a whiskey. And I've got the milks. But
Try a vodka espresso. Oh, just stick a little tot of that in there.
Let's do that.
I'm just going to mix this up with my pen.
Okay, I've got an Aldi vodka because I always think if you're going to stick vodka into another drink, don't use your nice stuff. Use the shit. Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much was that from Aldi?
About a tenner, if that. Let's pop that back on.
Have you got spirit in your coffee? Have you gone bareback?
I've already popped one of Ellie's expressos in there because I think it was past the witching hour of, what is it, 6:30 now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Cheers.
I've never had vodka in coffee before. That's nice, isn't it?
It's not bad.
Vodka in coffee. Yeah, I like that. Never done it before.
I can't taste my Kahlua, so I'm going to have to put some more in.
I reckon that I could. I'm going to drink about half of this and then I'm going to put Kahlua in as well.
Oh, I might put Cointreau in mine as well and some whiskey.
You don't do this this podcast every evening, do you?
No.
We've had to stop. We did. And we've just had to stop doing that now and just do it once a week.
It's important to pleasure yourself in a safe and sustainable way. Very important. I can't be seen to be promoting unsafe pleasuring.
Hashtag drink aware, pleasure aware. I know we'll get off the doctor thing in a minute because I'm sure you get fed up with people asking.
Oh, no, you're not going to ask more questions,
are
you?
I just want to know. You know when...
Sorry, Phil.
Don't apologise for me, Sally. You apologise for yourself.
Well, I'm apologising because I asked Phil to come on the podcast.
Okay, well, then this is your fault. So you should apologise. Dr. Phil, you know when people come in to talk to you and you say, how many units of alcohol do you drink a week? Obviously, for me and Sally, when you say, 14 bottles a week, is that
buckets
acceptable? What is the limit, please, that we should be drinking a week?
It's gone down since I started. It used to be 28 and 21,
Is that like 28 for little men, 21 glasses?
For women. No, units. And a unit is a single, I mean, it's much less than you think, a unit. It's a small glass of wine.
Oh, shit.
A single spirit. Or half a pint of ordinary strength lager or beer. So a unit is always much less than you think. And we tend to at least double what people say.
Yeah.
There was the old joke about an alcoholic is somebody who drinks more than their doctor. And it's hard for doctors because our coping mechanism traditionally has been quite alcohol-based.
I've been out drinking with doctors.
And so doctors aren't terribly good. I mean, they feel a bit hypocritical telling you to cut down a bit. And the idea now, I guess, is to try is see if you can have a couple of days off. If you can have a couple of days off a week without crawling up the stairs or seeing the spiders and all the rest of it, that's okay.
But I like this.
I did my last shot at fame, which went very badly. I was presenting something called Long Live Britain, which was my big relaunch on BBC One. I haven't done much on BBC One. With Juliet Bradbury and Phil Tufnell for some reason. And it was all about health. Health with Phil Tufnell. And it was going to go out prime time, and it didn't go out prime time because Prince Harry had one of his babies at the same time and everything was bumped. But we put a lot of effort into this. But my section of the show was to interview celebrities or people who had once been a celebrity but now wanted to get onto primetime television to talk about their habits. So the idea is we were going to pick up the early stages of diabetes or alcoholic liver disease before it had happened to try and stop it progressing too much. And we had all these scans and tests and things. And I interviewed, I guess, a dozen celebrities, most of whom were on knocking back at least a bottle of wine a night and sometimes more. And just as a matter of fact, so almost like doctors, they were what I call high-functioning alcoholics. They didn't really know, didn't stop them. They were going out, they were gigging, they were broadcasting, they were doing everything else. At least one of them on the FibroScan, which is this scan to see how stiff your liver is and how close it is to cirrhosis, had frank cirrhosis.
Oh!
Edwina Curry was the only one with a clean bill of health. And all the others, instead of catching them at an early stage of disease, they all had established disease. So,
Edwina Curry would have got rid of hers with that salmonella, wouldn't she?
She probably would have got rid of it out of the system. So there's a lot of us who are sort of, you know, you don't really realise. So I think the secret is to try and have 2 days off a week if you can.
Oh, I'm loving this advice. Phil, there must be loads of drunk stories, particularly from your medical student days. Have you got any classic drunk stories you can share with us?
My favourite drunk story was actually written in a book by a chap called Stephen Westerby, who's a cardiac surgeon, who called himself Jaws. He's one of those old-style cardiac surgeons. I call myself Jaws because I cut open anything day or night. And it's quite scary. And he tells this story in his book about being in the pub a bit pissed, and an emergency comes in and he's called into the operating theatre. And those days it wasn't unusual because everyone was on call for 168 hours a week because, you know, you're on call all the time. And he was desperate for a pee and he knew it was a big cardiac operation. And he thought he'd be okay because he was used to operating when he'd had a few drinks. But the trouble was he would need to pee. So he catheterized himself as he went into the operating theatre and fed the catheter down into his boots. So while he was doing open heart surgery on someone, he was filling up his boots. And he said, by the end of the operation, you could feel my boots squelching and urine was popping over the edge of them. But the patient survived. Could be complete bollocks, but it's in his book. Stephen Westerby, I can't remember what the autobiography is called, but that was, it was almost like the established coping mechanism. They didn't really train you at medical school how to be a doctor. It was a lot of a diversionary period before you went over the top, a bit like going over the top in the war and did your 120 hours a week. So they sort of encouraged you to drink 10 pints, drop your trousers and pee in somebody's flower bed. So you didn't ask awkward questions like, why do junior doctors work 120 hours a week for no money and kill patients when they're tired? So it's like trapping you with alcoholism.
Oh,
wow. I have a few friends who've carried on drinking very heavily and bit the dust, and some who've managed to cut back from their medical school drinking days. But
some of them have had 2 days off a week.
Yeah.
They have, and I think, to be fair, it was 70% men when I trained, and now there are more women. I think medicine has become kinder and more compassionate, and there's less of that really big gallows humour that we used to have. So all the women you now see on Twitter and social media talking about the NHS, they're great, but and they're terribly earnest. And the really dark humour that we used to have, people are hiding away in the doctor's mess saying, oh gosh, we can't let this out. I mean, Adam Kay has done it very successfully, but Adam gave up being a doctor. You know, when you're still a doctor these days, you're so scrutinised that your old coping mechanism of drinking a lot and taking the piss out of your patients is now hidden away. Because it's seen as unprofessional, whereas I made my career out of it originally.
Yeah.
So you've told us a story about one of your colleagues.
Yes.
What about you, Phil? What have you done that you are willing to share with us? It's only me and Sally here. Don't worry. Let's. You can tell us. It's fine.
Well, my nickname at medical school was Dr. Fumblefingers.
For what reason?
Well, exactly. You would think, what a fabulous gynecologist. It was because I was terrible, had terrible hand-eye coordination. So I've always had the gift of the gab, but I'm not. No way could I ever be a surgeon. But of course, you have to do a surgical house job. So I was put in positions as a house officer where I was assisting in operations, having to do operations. And my first job was for Mr. May, who was a surgeon at French A Hospital in Bristol. And I turned up, and this bloke had come into the emergency department with a sebaceous cyst on the top of his head. So this is a completely harmless cyst. In no way is it ever an emergency. You don't need to turn up to casualty with that. And his punishment was for me, the house officer, Dr. Fumblefingers, to remove it on my first day.
Oh, no.
I said to Mr. May, you're going to come down and supervise. He said, there's a book. It's called Procedures in Practice, page 14, Removing Sebaceous Cyst. And I got down there and I opened the book and it said, sebaceous cysts are never malignant. They don't turn into cancer, but they can reseed unless you take them out with a wide elliptical excision. And it's on the top of this bloke's head, and I put a lot of local anaesthetic in, and then I remove this cyst with a very wide elliptical excision. I take it off, I pop it in the pot, and I realise I've taken a huge hole out of his head. And I thought, well, I can't call out the plastic surgeons on my first day at the house. They're going to think I'm a complete ass. So I got the suture material, and with all my might, I tried to get these skin flaps together. This bloke's ears went up about 3 inches on either side. An instant facelift. And I finally managed to get the skin flaps together and I whipped my gloves off with a flourish and I realised I'd sutured a glove to the top of his head.
No!
It was like the last of the Mohicans. Bless, in those days you didn't admit if you made a mistake. I said, that's just a new dressing we're trying out at Fletcher Hospital. And he was lovely. He said, thank you, doctor. Thank you, doctor, for all you've done. I remember he was pleased as punch as he walked out of the theatre.
Looking like a cockerel.
So, yeah, that was my surgical career. And Mr. May was also very keen on laparoscopes. Laparoscopes are like the keyhole surgery we started doing, I guess, in the late 80s when I first qualified. And he was very keen on doing it. And he would spring surprises. So on days when you weren't supposed to be in the operating theatre, he would suddenly do an emergency appendectomy with his new laparoscope. And I hated being in the operating theatre because I was always cutting the sutures too short or too long or whatever. And I'd been out for a curry the night before and I'd had a good old Merg Masal herpes and a Limeswold bargee. And I was pretty, you know. And he calls me in the next morning to help in theatre when I'm not expecting it. And I'm holding some piece of equipment and he's trying to remove this appendix through his laparoscope and it's going very well. And then out from me emerges the most unpleasant, silent but deadly fart. You know, really bad morning after curry fart, but silent. And the nurse goes, I smell feces. And the registrar goes, I smell feces too. And Mr. May says, damn, I must have perforated the bowel. I'll have to open him up.
No.
So here's Dr. Phil. I've got two choices. Do I put my hand up and say, excuse me, sir, I made that heinous smell in your operating theatre. Can I have my reference now? Or do I stay silent and watch this poor sod open up like a zip while they search for the non-existent hole in his bowel? And I came up with a third way. It's very clever. And I leant forward very quietly to Mr. May and I said, I think it was sister.
No.
That was it. And sister never forgave me. It's the worst thing you can do as a junior doctor is to piss off the nurses. I got nicely out of that scrape and then the nurses never forgave me. They saw me as a bit of a joker who didn't own up to his own mistakes. So that was probably the worst thing I did as a junior doctor. Never upset the nurses. It's a golden rule.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you know, with nurses and doctors, I've been out drinking with both, and other civilians, and I think nurses and doctors get the most drunk out of anybody I've ever been out with, ever. And I remember going out with my friend Steve, who Lou has now called MRI Steve, haven't you? You've called him MRI Steve. That's my name for him.
Yeah,
because he let me have an MRI, and I don't think I've been
as a friend, like a social MRI. Or did you actually need it?
No. Well, I thought I had a little bit of a dodgy hip, and he just went, oh, "I'll go through it. You can go through the tunnel." I quite enjoyed it actually. The MRI scanner. I was worried that I was going to be a bit nervous, but I was fine. And then I was saying to another doctor, and I did think, well, if I get a bit nervous, I can always struggle out. And he went, well, not if you're massively overweight, and then you have to go to the zoo for an MRI. I love that. So anyway. Yeah. I am digressing, but I do enjoy that very much, the fact that people have to go to the zoo for an MRI. I think it's one of the best things in the world. Anyway, and I said to another doctor friend, I said, is that true? And he went, yeah. MRI Steve, actually. He went, yeah, when I worked in Manchester, we used to send them off to Chester Zoo. I went, oh, God, this is fantastic. Anyway, I've never been out with anybody who's got so drunk. You must have drunk stories of your own, Phil, where you've been out and got absolutely embarrassingly shit-faced.
Yes.
Go on, tell us. That's what we want. That's what we want.
There was a St. Thomas's drinking club, and because St. Thomas's and the police used to look out for each other, you were allowed to go around, and students at St. Thomas's were allowed to urinate in the street, apparently, if they did it on the back left rear wheel of a taxi carriage or something under some ancient law, and you weren't supposed to be prosecuted. And a lot of us would go out and then assume that you could urinate anywhere, which is it's just not a great way to behave. But I can remember being on Waterloo Station and with a chap called Jeff. He's now quite a senior GP, so I won't give you his surname. And he decided, well, he was so desperate, he peed in the fire bucket on Waterloo Station, was arrested by transport police. And then in a because he was in black tie, very, very posh boys, trying to explain through the law why it was absolutely okay. It's absolutely appropriate, absolutely nothing here. And it's almost like, it's what posh privilege, when you look at Boris Johnson now and people who are very posh and very privileged think that it buys them a certain get out of jail card. You can imagine if Boris was caught, you know, peeing in a fire bucket or with a pole dancer or something, he would have, you know, he'd pay the privilege card and things would be absolutely live. So my stories of drunkenness at medical school are tinged with a slightly unpleasant privilege where generally we probably got off with things we shouldn't have done.
Okay.
And I look back on it and I really enjoyed it. I have to say, I was always Commander Biddley Bums, so which that meant I was always in charge of the drinking games because I didn't want to drink a pint of vomit or urine or anything else.
Fair
but
enough.
If you were Commander Biddley Bums, you could make somebody else do it. So I
like
was
what? What games did you play then? So you'd have to make somebody drink something really horrible.
My favourite one was Flaming A's, which is a very old game where two people sit. You've probably played this, or you can play it tonight.
We can play it now.
You drop your trousers and someone stands on a bar stool there and someone on another. And then you take a roll of lavatory paper and you unfurl it and you clutch it in between their buttocks, so one end and one the other, and then you light it in the middle, and obviously it burns both ways, and the person still standing wins the flaming aid.
Brilliant.
So that's the sort of...
Brilliant.
But sadly, we can't do it with social distancing.
And then the other great game they used to play is bleep roulette. So the junior doctors would come in and they'd all put their bleeps in the centre and they would pick one out at random. So the psychiatrist would have to carry the surgeon's bleep. And the surgeon would carry the psychiatrist, please. I would imagine that was very dangerous and not something I would condone. And of course, it wouldn't happen now.
But it was
days where you would work very long hours, but with no accountability. So since...
Was it like Carry On Doctor? Was it just like a Carry On film?
It probably was. I mean, my issue with it is that I started off being a drunken bum ruggahearty. And then when I became a junior doctor, I became quite political. There was a lovely woman called Ruth Gilbert, known as Red Ruth, who sort of politicised me and said, it's really not acceptable junior doctors work 120 hours a week and kill patients when they're tired and et cetera. But I couldn't quite take the British Medical Association seriously. So the comedy double act I formed, Struck Off and Die with Tony Gardner, was about going to the Edinburgh Fringe, telling very dark stories of killing patients when we were tired and then burning the notes and burying the x-rays and laughing it off in the mess.
Wow.
And it was really dark. I mean, really dark. And the BBC came and recorded it.
Oh.
And it was at midnight in some old Masonic lodge in Edinburgh. And then they replayed it after the Archers.
On about
6:30 in the evening. It got record numbers of complaints to the Broadcasting Standards Council.
Brilliant.
And we were famous. And then we got invited to the BBC Light Entertainment Christmas Party. And I met Ian Hislop, the editor of Private Eye, and followed him to the toilet and said, can I have a column in Private Eye? And, but all, you know, you don't really plan a comedy career, but all the lucky breaks I got stem from the fact that we would tell the most outrageous, shocking black anecdotes. And as I've grown older and matured a bit, I don't do that. But we got caught out because we used to do this gag up at the Edinburgh Fringe where we'd say, you know, our local heart surgery unit is known as the Killing Fields and the Departure Lounge. And people would roar with laughter. And there's a BBC recording of this. Then later we found out at the bit of the heart surgery unit that was actually having struggling was the paediatric cardiac surgery unit. And I'd started writing for Private Eye and I investigated the story and found out that far too many babies were dying at Bristol compared to other units.
It
was the first story I wrote in Private Eye in 1992.
Famous story.
Became what was then the largest public inquiry in British history, but it took until 2000. And I'm summoned to give evidence. And that's when you realise you start off thinking you can do comedy about stuff that matters. And then when it gets really serious, it suddenly isn't funny. And I remember I took the witness stand at the public inquiry and this shit-hot QC said, Dr. Hammond, when you refer to the Bristol unit as the Killing Fields and the Departure Lounge, that's medical humour, is it?
Oh, no.
And that was my opening thing. And
what did you say?
I said, well, you have to understand the context. And that is, it is interestingly, because in my experience, that's how medical humour works. So every hospital I trained at would have a surgeon called Killer Keen or Chopper Charlton or the Terminator. And you'd sort of laugh at it. And these were people who'd given their lives and often their liver to the NHS. They worked 120 hours a week. You couldn't fault their dedication, but you wouldn't really want them operating on your dog. But nobody wanted to muck up their pension, so nobody blew the whistle. So the thing that I did with the help of a very brave whistleblower called Steve Bolson, who was the anaesthetist who blew the whistle in Bristol, was to say, actually, doctors should speak up. You can make jokes about it in the medical school bar. You can run away to the Edinburgh Fringe and laugh about it. But actually, if you're working in a situation where people are dying avoidably, you need to speak up. So that's a sort of... You know, it's terrible when comedians go through a serious phase, but I went through a serious phase for a while doing all this Bristol stuff and various other whistleblowing stories. And now I've calmed down a bit and I'm going back to being a bit more relaxed and funny again.
Oh, fantastic.
But it's a challenge after the pandemic, isn't it? You know, 150,000 people have died. How are we going to start laughing again? And I said, my biggest error probably ever, I predicted on Twitter that more people would die falling down the stairs than from SARS. I predicted that in January when the Chinese had released the genome for their virus and we're going to have a test. And I thought, well, that'll be fine. We've got really good public experts, health experts in this country. We've all been preparing for a pandemic. We'll be able to close it down like we did in SARS with 2002 and it won't be a pandemic. But it doesn't sound so funny now. And I'm thinking, can I use this as comedy material? Can I walk on stage and say, I predicted more people would fall down the stairs than from SARS, and some people might find it funny and some would be hugely offended. So I think the rules have changed. I think we're less, you know, it's fine taking the piss out of yourself, but I think we're far more wary now of taking on big issues. Because someone will be offended somewhere. And they
But somebody's always going to be offended, aren't they? So you just have to, kind of just do, as long as you sort of relate it to yourself and your experiences, then you just think, well, you can be offended on behalf of other people if you want to.
I mean, it is difficult, isn't it? I remember having conversations with Ian Hislop because I was covering the pandemic all the way through and then Boris Johnson gets ill. And Ian's really thinking, geez, you know, what do we put on the cover if he dies? Is it, how do you, you know, it was a real, as these things unfold, they are really interesting. But he did dice with death a bit. He's a bit of a risk taker, I think, Mr. Johnson. And he was shaking hands with people in hospital and not taking it seriously. And it nearly got him. So,
yeah.
It's good to be cautious. It's something you don't really want at whatever age. I wouldn't advise a coronavirus infection.
No. No, don't
try
advise
and avoid
that.
It. Try and avoid it if you can.
If you squat on a loo, will you avoid coronavirus infection? That's what we need to know.
In the right position, yeah. Wearing
yes.
a mask.
Yes. You see, the squatty potty comes into its own, $29.99 from Amazon. Saved my arsehole, Phil. Absolutely saved my arsehole.
Louise,
what?
Will you? I know you printed off a listener letter. Will you? Will you read it out for
yes,
us?
Yes, I will. Phil, we do this thing where we read drunken stories from our listener.
Okay.
And I've got two here, which I'm going to share. And we're not allowed to say the person's name, but okay. I'm just going to call them Faye.
Dr. Fiddly Poppers or something.
That's her name. I had a housemate at uni who got so pissed when she woke up, she realised she was really late for an assessment. She dived back into her clothes, looking like shit, and headed out. As she was crossing a main street in Liverpool, she realised why her jeans didn't feel quite right. She looked down to see the previous night's knickers falling out of the leg of her jeans. It was a busy street. Mm. We've all done that, haven't we? Mm. Please. So having to make a quick decision, she didn't retrieve them. So she had to see her hangover pants every day for the next 2 weeks of leaving her flat because they fell on the street. That's her first story. And her second story was, I once got so pissed that I woke up in bed next to someone and I had to raise the covers to find out what sex they were. Well, there you go.
Doesn't matter though, does it? What matters is whether you enjoyed it.
Exactly.
And nothing to do with what sex they were, whether it was enjoyable.
Have you ever found yourself in that position, Phil?
I don't think so, but I've often not had my glasses on. I've got my -8 in both eyes, so I'm pretty vulnerable without my glasses on first thing in the morning. So I have sometimes, I can remember as a student waking up and not realising there was somebody in the bed. That was slightly awkward. But you know, these things happen.
Yeah. Have you ever done your
consent
surgery?
Is the important thing.
Yes, exactly, well, yes. Phil.
You really are kind, aren't you now? You're very, you know, you're very on, you're woke, I think is the word I'm looking for.
I'm a role model, I think you're fine.
A role model, there we go. Yeah. There
oh,
we go.
Jesus, please don't be. have you ever done a surgery and one of your knickers has fallen out your trouser leg during the middle of a surgery?
No, I haven't done that. I'm thinking of knicker stories. I remember a mate of mine, very angry at a party, the traumatic split up with his girlfriend at his girlfriend's birthday party. This is the meanest thing ever. And he was so upset. You know, there's always a room at a party where people put their coats. And it was in his girlfriend's bedroom. So he went up there with a jar of Marmite and he smeared Marmite and all their knickers and left them on the floor. That's a really mean trick, isn't it?
That's hilarious. That's a brilliant idea.
That's a bad knicker trick when you know. Doctors are very clever, but a bit bitter and peculiar. I think that's generally quite.
Do you think it's just,
they don't take rejection well.
They just kill them and then just change the medical notes. Oh, well, I'm sort of.
Marmite knickers.
Jam knickers, or you could do all sorts, couldn't you? Have you ever treated somebody while you've been very hungover?
Not recently. I mean, I can remember as a junior doctor going to mess parties in the week and so feeling a bit whatever, but I don't think...
No, not recently necessarily. I wouldn't... Not now you're woke.
I can't think to the extent that it made me any more than the usually minimally competent I was. I've never had a day off work, rather extraordinarily, I'm 59 now. Never had a day off. Well, I did one. I had viral meningitis once, which
time off work? Fucking hell, Phil.
Very quickly. But I then had to have a lumbar puncture. One of the medical students I taught communication skills had to give me the lumbar puncture because I had meningitis. And he looked at me and he went, fuck me, it's you. Which I thought, thank God I taught him communication skills.
Yes.
And then he kept missing. I don't know if you have to get in the fetal position in your pants. So you're there with one of your students. You're in the fetal position in your pants. And he kept missing with the lumbar puncture needle.
Nervous because it was you.
I wondered whether he was nervous or whether he might be a bit hungover. But you just take it on the chin. Anyway, I survived. It wasn't pleasant. It was the worst thing I've ever had, a lumbar puncture. Didn't like that very much.
Never had one. Don't want one now.
Avoid that one. Avoid that. You don't need it. No. So I'm getting out of your question. I don't know what the answer is. It's not something that
can't
I have.
Can't remember the question, to be honest.
No. Moving on.
I tell you what we will do, actually, because we've got a little Patreon page, and we will give a little shout out, won't we? We've said we'll give a shout out to our Patreons. And if you want to join our Patreon page, then you can at Patreon. Don't even know the address. Spit or Swallow podcast. You can find that. And you can support the podcast. And we said we'd give a shout out. So we're going to give a little shout out to you. You can shout out, Lou.
Oh, Cable. Phil, Kay is a gem of a woman. Every week, without fail, she advertises our podcast for us. And Phil,
she doesn't stop.
She's relentless, and she's the sort of woman that you want on your side.
Good.
And yeah,
she'd have got that BBC One programme on prime time. She would have overridden Prince
Harry.
She's
probably in charge of the vaccine rollout, isn't she?
She's
the sort of person you want.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cable.
Yeah.
Cable. B-U-L-L.
Not cable television, but
cable.
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 Yeah. Should we
get her on it?
Should we go in with a final question then, Sally?
There's two final questions, Lou. You always forget the reason for the podcast, but you do your penultimate question. Go on, Lou.
Dr. Philip of Hammond, let's imagine that you've got a spittoon in front of you and it's got the shrapnel and the spitting of what excesses of somebody, right? And you have to drink it. Whose spittoon would you drink?
Wow.
Yep.
That's really interesting. So you're thinking, so you need somebody with good mouth hygiene, I'm guessing. Who do we know would have really good mouth hygiene?
I just went like that with my teeth, cleaning them as if I was going to offer you mine for a minute.
Get the socks hygiene. Off.
The Kahlua socks. I'm on neat Kahlua now, by the way.
I can see that. Your neck's gone red.
Dr. Phil. There might be a slight allergy.
You have got a slight allergy, haven't you there? Yeah. Well, that's your antihistamine. You need to have one of those. I just told you not to, but you might need one this evening. Yeah. Who's spittoon? Gosh. Jacinda Ardern.
Oh, yes.
Jacinda Ardern's spittoon.
Prime Minister of New Zealand,
who's been slightly ahead of the curve and managed to stop the pandemic. And she did a budget on a people and planet budget. I mean, what planet is she on? She said, let's make health of people and our planet our paramount political concern. I mean, she's so way ahead of the curve compared to our politicians.
What did she say that again? Repeat that. She said
we should make welfare of people and planet are paramount political concern. So every policy is seen through the prism of what's it doing to the welfare of people, particularly the poorest, what's it doing to our planet? So every political policy you make, you judge it on those criteria. She's a star. So I would happily drink at her spittoon and hopefully say hello to her.
And also, what's that thing when you put all those, the first letter of a word? What's the thing when it's alliteration?
Acronym. Alliteration. Oh, I see what you mean, yes.
Yes, that involved, wasn't there?
Yeah,
all of them.
Yeah.
So the final question, which Lou always forgets, the reason for the podcast is it a spit or a swallow? The grind coffee. We go back to the original, the grind coffee from Shoreditch, no less.
Via my daughter Ellie.
Yeah, via your lovely daughter.
You'll be dissing my daughter Ellie if you spit this.
Well, when will you see Ellie again? Do you know?
Where? By podcast every week or by Zoomy, whatever. Face to face, I'm not sure, to be honest.
Oh. Soon. Well, I have actually swallowed all of it. I finished it with the vodka, which is why I've moved on to the Kahlua, because I didn't have the forethought to get myself.
Is that why you're slightly flushed? Is you've done that little flush?
It always happens.
Always. Yeah. Brings up the flush, if that's the right expression. Slightly pissed now as well.
It's a swallow from me. I've really enjoyed this coffee. I've seen this in my friends' houses and I've always gone, they're really rich. Because it's, quite pricey. It's not like Nescafe.
No, I think it's compostable as well. I think the capsule is compostable, as far as I'm aware, that you can put it in your compost.
I'm not posh like you two. I've got ground... Oh, yeah. Oh, shit, I've just tipped it everywhere. Oh, what a dick. I've got ground coffee, and that was delicious.
Have you tried composting these, though, Phil?
No, apparently you can.
Thank you so much for joining us. You've been
a
delight to chat to.
You're welcome.
Glad Lou didn't ask you any more of her medical questions.
No, I will keep you abreast.
But she may well email you with them.
I will keep you abreast of them.
Perhaps a little Snapchat with the bell problem would be appropriate.
Yeah, I think so. Thanks.
An Insta bell update.
Thanks.
Trust me. But honestly, get in the squatty position, make sure your wee is straw coloured or lighter, and a shot of that coffee, a few fibrous vegetables. Bob's your uncle.
He is as well. Thank you.
Can I go now?
Yes.
I've said enough.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spit or Swallow is produced by Amanda Redman.
If you want to get in touch with us about what you thought about the drinks that we've tried, or recommendations of your own, or you feel like sharing your worst drunken story with us, then please do.
On Twitter and Insta, we are at Lou and Sally. Facebook and TikTok is Spit or Swallow Podcast. Or email us at spitorswallowpodcast34, that's the numbers 34, @gmail.com.
If you've enjoyed the podcast, then please subscribe and leave us a review, because this helps other people find us.
And if you want to support the podcast, then go to www.patreon.com/spitorswallowpodcast, where you can find some bonus content.
Thanks to Acast for hosting us, but most of all, thanks to you lot for listening.
That's all for now. See you next time.
Bye!